right? No one is talking about the fact that a lot of Western countries have much higher debt to GDP ratios than we do as African countries, where the average is around, you know, 40 something percent, you know, debt to GDP. So that means that fundamentally we do have the capacity to pay off these debts, and they are not necessarily a burden unless we do reach a place where we're not able to create income as a continent. So I'd say what we need to be focusing on is how much money are we making, not how much money are we borrowing.
Hello there, Mindshakers.
Welcome to another episode of the Mindshake Podcast.
This podcast has been developing and growing beyond our expectations.
We would really like to thank you.
Of course. Today's guest is the one and only Sean Karanja. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to have you here. Personally, I think he is amazing. Just a short introduction for him. Our guest today aims to be an agent of change in their immediate community and the world at large. He's a student at the African Leadership University, currently studying his honors in business management. He's also the co-founder and CEO of Project Exponential. It is an organization transforming the mindset and skill set of youth in Kenya through training programs, mentorship, and access to employment opportunities. Wow. Sean, what are you looking forward to today?
Awesome, guys. First of all, thank you so much for having me on. As many of you guys know, you know, stuff around finance, just, you know, investing in Africa's future, whatever that might look like, is, you know, a conversation topic that is really close to my heart. So, you know, when you guys reached out and said, you know, you'd love me on the podcast, I said, no, I would love to be on the podcast. You know, it's the other way around. Been following you guys and listening to the content you're putting out. Fantastic job. So, yeah, it's my pleasure to be of value where I can. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Amazing. The pleasure is ours. Okay, to start us off, what do you think is causing Africa's debt?
Well, I think if we're to take a step back and, you know, just ask ourselves what debt really is, I think that would be a great way to start this off and just, you know, frame how we're going to approach this. We have had a extensive history of us being exploited, right? Be that through colonialism, be that through us being, you know, a primary producer of, you know, raw materials and getting really bad, you know, dollar to kilogram, you know, rates on our raw materials for a long time. You know, Western and Eastern countries have been exploiting that leadership failure of ours. And from that exploitation, you know, we have now grown into, you know, what they're calling the second stage of Africa's exploitation, which looks less like colonialism and more like, you know, neo-colonialism, right? And at the center of that debate is whether players like China, the United States, etc., are playing a part in putting us in some sort of debt trap, right? Where they give us cheap money, which isn't really cheap at all when you look at some of the policies they've put in place. And, you know, there's this whole debate around, are we going to be stuck in a hole repaying our debts? So when you ask why do we have debt in Africa? I mean, it's simple. Every society has debt. And, you know, you will find, you know, along the course of this conversation that, you know, my outlook on debt is, you know, slightly controversial, but, you know, would make sense with a bit of explaining. But I generally think that we are in debt because we are rapidly expanding, and we do not have the internal financial capacity to basically sustain that growth. And so we are having to look for external partners and external investors and financiers who can basically help our governments meet their different development goals. So that, I'd say, has been a large component to why we've got, you know, a lot of debt on this continent. But yeah, I'd argue that we're not doing too badly with our debt, relatively, we're not doing too badly, but a lot of it has gone into infrastructure, etc. Of course, a lot of it has also gone into politicians' pockets, but that's something we'll get into as the conversation goes on.
Yes, we will. But you said Africa might be in some sort of debt trap. But I don't know if you've noticed, we've been in a pandemic and most of the African countries' debts have been relieved or like pushed down the line. Is that giving us a little more leverage on like China, the US, or is it just pushing the can down the road? Like, you'll be back in this cage when this is all over.
Right. So, you know, when we look at that large chunk of debt that the continent actually owes, it's standing at around $283 billion that, you know, we owe public and private creditors. So remember, there's also private companies in the mix here and private banks, etc., that are loaning us money. But when we really think about, you know, are we in a debt trap, so to speak, you know, I'd argue that we're not really, right? And the reason why is that if you focus on the plain fact that we do have debt, I think a lot of the reason why we do have it and whether or not it's good gets lost in that blanket statement that we've got debt and, you know, China, etc., trying to put us in a debt trap, right? I think that's a very, you know, blanket statement and would oversee a lot of the reasons why, you know, we actually need this debt. But just like you're saying, Shane, you know, COVID has given us a good opportunity to basically ease off some of that, $283 billion. And, you know, Sudan, for example, China did in the past write off like about $160 million of their 6-point-something billion owed. And you find that a lot of times China as a lending partner is more interested in the fact that you will keep using them as a service provider rather than, you know, basically holding you in a chokehold over one deal and not letting go. Remember, as we are speaking of this, remember where China came from, because that's also going to frame a very big part of why I think, you know, we're not really in a debt trap. Because who is our largest, you know, debt partner? You know, that would be China, but we don't just owe them money, right? They've been coming here to build highways. They've been coming here to build, you know, railways, buildings, both residential, commercial, etc. So if you look at, and I'd argue, if you look at your immediate environment, both of you, and ask yourself, is your country flourishing and what are the signs of that? A large chunk of that progress that you see in your country, and like cutting edge technology and infrastructure you're seeing, is from China. And so when they're easing off our debt and, you know, COVID basically allowing us to have better terms on our deals, I think that's kind of a blessing in disguise, because that gives us more time to develop more, but also create capacity so that we can pay these things off. So COVID has been a bit of a blessing in disguise. Lots of free money going around, you know, COVID relief. My only concern is that, you know, it's getting eaten up by the political class. But otherwise, I think, you know, COVID has been good for borrowing for the continent.
You know, Sean, I'm actually grateful that you actually mentioned some of the positive effects of this so-called debt that Africa has, especially to China. And you mentioned, you know, infrastructure and everything. But what are some either short-term or long-term negative effects that, you know, the debt has on Africa facing? So basically 10 years down the line, what is the greater effect on Africa negatively?
That's a good question. Let me frame it this way. Right, taking money for development is not a bad thing. Look at a country like the United States. You know, a lot of times when we think of, oh, you know, African countries are drowning in debt, wait, let's take a step back and actually ask ourselves, what are the numbers that we need to be looking at? Is it the fact that we owe billions of dollars to these different entities? I'd argue that that's not the thing we should be focusing on. We should be focusing on, number one, what are the terms of those agreements, number one. And number two, where is that capital, you know, really going into, right? Because I'd argue that if you look at a country like the United States, they've developed, you know, they're a superpower, you know, top two. You could argue whether China is taking that, you know, podium position, but I'd say they're top two because they figured out how to basically print money out of thin air to fund their development. So if you think about their debt to GDP ratio, they're above 100% debt to GDP ratio. So basically that means that they owe more money than they are making. But no one is talking about that, are they? Right? No one is talking about the fact that a lot of Western countries have much higher debt to GDP ratios than we do as African countries, where the average is around, you know, 40-something percent, you know, debt to GDP. So that means that fundamentally we do have the capacity to pay off these debts, and they are not necessarily a burden unless we do reach a place where we're not able to create income as a continent. So I'd say what we need to be focusing on is how much money are we making, not how much money are we borrowing. Because at the end of the day, if we're making more money than we're borrowing, we're good. The US government owes trillions of dollars to God knows who. you know, like, who? What are you doing with $7 trillion of debt? And who do you owe all that money to? Trillion, remember, that's the T. We're still in the B's. And, you know, the T's are exponentially, you know, far away from where we're at right now. So I'd argue that we have a lot of development to go through. The US is doing well. They're a credit-based society, meaning if the small entrepreneur needs money for their business idea, they can quickly go and get a loan from the bank. They are a credit society. They've understood how to use credit for development, which I think is our flaw, that we are so focused on this Western narrative that Africa shouldn't be taking debt, rather than us figuring out how can we take smart debt to fund our development, which in turn helps us pay off our debt. So I think there needs to be a paradigm shift as to how we're taking debt, not the fact that we're taking debt. So to be honest, as long as the terms of us taking loans make sense, you know, no Chinese can come and, you know, come to Nairobi and say, hey, we built you guys like 8 superhighways, now we want your national park. You know, that's excuse my French, that's like a dumb deal. You know what I'm saying? And those are the kinds of deals that I wouldn't expect our, you know, governance bodies to be taking. So as long as they're smart debt deals and they are going towards us building capacity to pay off, and the financial models of them doing so and the viability of those projects is sound. Personally, Rudo and Shane, I think we're in a good place. We've not yet hit rock bottom here with our debt. We've got a long way to go.
I get what you mean. And you talked about how we should get debt. But have you heard, I don't know if you've been listening to the news, like it was last year, it mostly came out, about multiple African finance ministers wrote like an essay about how debt should be cancelled for the poorest countries. Imagine you or me have this, we're private investors, we've decided to loan out money, and they just decide to cancel it, would stop paying. Is that viable? Is that a real idea to just lay out there to share with the public? Or let's just cancel it.
Well, here's the thing, right? I do feel that canceling debt would be unfair for those who have had to pay it off and at great cost, right? If you think of, you know, places like Sri Lanka, who recently lost a port of theirs because they weren't able to, you know, basically finance off a debt that they had to China. I'd say that, you know, if we were in their shoes and we saw other countries getting forgiven 100% for the debts they've taken, that wouldn't be really nice or fair, right? So if we're thinking of it from an equitable standpoint of what is actually fair for everyone, because we're all taking loans, what happens if the US government decides, hey, someone cancel off this, you know, $7 trillion that we owe, and, you know, we just move and it's all vibes. You know, like, that wouldn't be fair for the African country that has had to sacrifice a lot of, you know, money that could have gone into education, that could have gone into healthcare, etc. You know, paying off highways. It wouldn't be fair for countries to have it fully paid off. That's just me talking from a standpoint of, you know, business ethics and, you know, what's actually fair. But, you know, flip the coin, if we look at what the terms of those agreements were, a lot of times these agreements weren't made with the financial health and, you know, the economic health of these countries taken into consideration. So sometimes there have been loans that have been, you know, put out here and there where the fact that whether you can repay it or not has not been taken into consideration. And I do feel like that is predatory. So I'd say instead of canceling it necessarily, you know, finding a way for there to be mutual, you know, accountability, first of all, from whoever gave out that loan, to say, hey, look, okay, we did overstep and we did give you more than we knew you could have paid. But look, guys, aren't our leaders adults? Like, let's think about it. And if we're actually thinking of this from a standpoint of us as youth holding our leaders accountable, you know, you as a grown-up went into that room with that Chinese person. They may have slipped you a, you know, duffel bag full of $1 million for you to, you know, fast-track that loan. You did take that loan upon yourself. And, you know, there is an obligation for you to actually own up to that. But now where I'd urge we should start focusing on is not, okay, can this loan get cancelled? We messed up. But do we have the regulatory and policy frameworks and systems that would actually allow us to do that in a way that's fair for most, if not all, investors in whatever project it was that was borrowed for? So that's a matter of institutions, right? Do we have the right institutions that would allow for a fair exchange of value to happen, where a loan could possibly be written off, or a sort of exchange of equal monetary value can be given, or some sort of deal with economic incentive could be made to basically outweigh, you know, whatever is still left. So I think it's going to be a game of smart policy here to find a balance, because I don't think, you know, I mean, myself, you know, having, you know, had almost 2 or so years in the investments industry, in finance via, you know, I run an investment fund, etc. So right now, if I'm thinking, okay, I took investors' capital, I promised them that I would give them a certain amount back. I am supposed to be held liable, and I am held liable to date, you know, of returns. You know, has there been progress? You know, what is the money that we put in yielded, etc. and etc. So the same way that I would expect as a private investor, where I put my money to go into, for there to be checks and balances and systems of accountability, is the same way that, you know, there needs to be the same for our governments, which I think is lacking. So for me, I'd say it's a policy issue. It can't be a black and white, yes, let's cancel debt, that's okay, or no, let's not cancel debt, that's not okay. That's not really the answer that we would get here. It's a lot more complex and would require a consortium of different policymakers, you know, like a body like the African Union or something, coming together and representing us all on behalf of us as a continent. So I think that's what it's going to take.
Yeah, but thank you, listeners, for making it to this far. Sean, we have a cool segment in our podcast where we introduce a fun game, just a small game for you. So Shane, can you take us through it?
So Sean, we'll be asking you 5 questions, no more about you. So our first question, this is a cool question. What shows are you into right now? What are you watching?
In terms of shows, there's this really cool one that I found. I think it's a HBO show. Guys, locally, you can get it on Showmax. I found that Showmax is a really great platform. Hey, Showmax, run me my check. I'm doing free advertising. So yeah, I mean, I've been on Showmax and I've been watching Next. So there's a series called Next, N-E-X-T, like Next, like Next Door, Next. And that's been pretty cool. I mean, I've really enjoyed it. It's about this rogue AI program that, you know, is out to terminate humanity, etc. And, you know, there's this tech founder who's trying to stop it because he invented it actually and feels bad. So, I mean, like, that was a really great series. It played with my emotions. That one was, it was crazy. I recommend everyone should check out Next. What else have I watched? Last Stand. That's also a great one, on Showmax/HBO. The Last Stand. Last Stand is basically about, you know, a corona type of, you know, virus spreads out and, you know, kills most of the United States population. You know, funny thing about United States shows is that, like, we don't see what's happening around the rest of the world. So I don't know if Africans were alive. We probably were. But as far as the US was concerned, you know, they were wiped out and, you know, there's a bunch of guys trying to survive. And yeah, it's just this fight between good and evil. There's lots of really great actors on it as well. But this fantastic storyline. So I'm watching The Last Stand and Next right now.
No pun intended, but next question. If people like follow you on social media, they would know you're big into finance, you're big into Forex. You're that Forex dude, you're the one who wins actually. There's a difference. But we know you dominate, you do well in those areas. But what job would you be terrible at? It's like, this is not for me.
I probably wouldn't be too good with, you know, admin type of jobs where it's like, you know, you have to do, like, you know, really, really minute type of tasks. So, like, very repetitive type of tasks. I don't like that. So if there's no aspect of something growing, any job that doesn't include me growing something, I would mentally check out and, you know, really suck at that job and take many days off and probably quit. So, yeah, anything that is just very circular and repetitive. Like, I wouldn't be on a manufacturing line, you know, doing one task every day. I think I'd get bored and try and do them a bit differently and get fired in the process.
So we won't find you building those Volkswagen somewhere in Germany. But from what I know, as I know you a little personally, I know you're big into planning for the future. 5 years and 2, 3, 5 years ahead. But what are you absolutely determined to do? If you had to choose one thing, this is the thing I have to do with the next 5 years or any like time frame. What are you determined on achieving?
I am absolutely determined on building Africa's financial capacity to fund its own growth. So from a standpoint, and, you know, it really ties into what we're even talking about today, that thing of why do we have to go and look outside for funding for our own businesses and ideas? Why do we have to go outside to find our own education when, you know, we can create those systems of investment? Because I'm also in the education space, as well as I am in finance, because I recognize that the two greatest investments we could ever make are in our capital markets and our pocket. So the two P's, our pocket and our people. Because if our people have nothing in their pockets and our people have nothing in their heads, then we'll always be looking to the West for affirmation. We'll always be looking to the West and the East now for, you know, funding and just to tell us who we are, when in fact, you know, if we're able to own that, own our capital, own our resources, own our education and make it look like us and feel like us and be for us. For me, that's my biggest goal, to basically front run and pioneer us owning our own internal capital and education systems.
That sounds lovely. And I think you most definitely can do that. You're most capable. I believe that. Thank you for participating. We are done with the game.
To our listener, thank you. Thank you for all your support and feedback. We see it, and it's the fuel that ignites our journey. Please remember to like, continue to give us your comments on Instagram, subscribe, and share our podcast with at least 2 friends as we continue to improve your experience. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
So we're back with the questions. And Sean, you said your opinion on that is a little out there, and I really appreciate that. And I don't know if you've known this, that you said $283 billion in debt to public and private lenders, but most of that debt is to, you know, those northern African countries. So I'm mostly saying Egypt, Algeria, and Morocco. And I don't know if you've been there, but they're doing pretty well. So that's, so, you know, I don't know if you've probably heard this. When people hear Africa and debt, oh, we're enslaved to the white man. Is that always the consequences? Oh, you've loaned out money. You've been loaned out money. You're trapped, as you said.
You mentioned, Shane, North African countries taking a lot of debt. So let's look at one of the bigger projects that, you know, has taken place in the past couple of years. We've got Morocco. And basically, if we know, you know, our basic geography, we know that Morocco is bordering the Sahara Desert, right? It's hot. But instead of them looking at the hot and arid nature of the environment as a bad thing, and, you know, looking for money to basically, you know, build farms and stuff out there, they said, you know what, how about we build a solar farm? And we might not have the internal capacity to fund the whole thing, but let's bring on board investors from surrounding countries to put in capital into this thing, right? This is an example of something that, you know, it's worth, I think it's about $2.5 billion is the estimated cost of what that solar power station is basically costing. And it's huge. I mean, 6,000 and something acres in the desert of solar panels, right? Imagine that. Imagine how much energy they're being able to create. Of course, it's a large infrastructure project. And so, you know, they had to get funding from like the World Bank, Africa Development Bank, you know, the European Investment Bank, those kind of things. And, you know, billions of dollars and millions of euros were put into that project. But these other agencies came on board as business partners. It's owned by the Moroccan Agency of, you know, Sustainable Energy, right? The guys who basically are the ones who are spearheading renewables in Morocco. So this is an example of good debt where these North African countries are taking in massive amounts of capital, but putting them into massive projects which have massive yield, right? So when we see that these guys are moving ahead, it's simply because of, you know, their ability to translate this debt into income generating projects. Now, devil's advocate, right? We could say that, okay, it might take a long time for you to pay off that initial capital cost. We know how solar is right now. It's much cheaper to do like coal, etc. But long term, these guys could gain energy independence in a world that's transferring out of fossil fuels. That's a smart move, and that's smart debt. And so if these guys are way ahead of us, you know, compare these guys to Nigeria, where fuel subsidies are running in the billions of dollars just to make fuel affordable for a country that's one of the largest producers of crude oil. It doesn't make sense, right? But you find that people like Aliko Dangote are now, you know, investing in, you know, a huge, like, I think it's one of the world's largest oil refineries, you know, like largest in Africa. So, you know, we do see that, yes, you know, North Africa might have had a bit of a head start in terms of connecting to external capital and actually using it in a smart way. But, you know, we are catching up, and we have to give ourselves credit where it's due. But I think, you know, smart debt is going to be the way forward. Yeah, we just need good policies around that. So policy is going to be king.
Yes, you heard it from the man himself. Thank you so much, Sean, for being on this podcast. It was honestly such a pleasure just listening to you and your passion and the knowledge that you have. Thank you for sharing it with us. And most importantly, thank you also to our listeners for listening to this episode on loans in Africa. Is it the end of the road? So Mindcheckers, we encourage you. Yeah, Mindcheckers, please, we encourage you to please go out there and share anything you might have learned from this episode and strive to learn together and boldly shake the world. With love. See you next time. Mwah, 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 mwah. Bye.
Thank you for listening. Thank you so much for listening through to the end.
If you enjoyed it, please like and subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. But come on, let's do all of them, you know?
There's going to be more exciting episodes to come. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at MIND_SHACK_.
So, see you on the next one.